This is Layla Mudin, RD. I see patients every day here at the Hoffman Center. If you require a nutrition consult with me, but live out of town, there's no need to travel to New York City. I have telephone consultations with clients from all over the country. Please visit drhoffman.com for more information. And to set up an appointment, call 212-779-1744. That's 212-779-1744. I look forward to being a collaborator in your healthcare.
Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. It's our weekly Q&A with Layla, wherein we answer your questions. And how are you doing, Layla?
I'm all right, Dr. Hoffman. How are you doing?
Good, good, good. So in part one, I promised that I would share with our listeners a quote on the subject of the hubris that we sometimes have, which is a word from, I guess, the Greeks, which means our self-assuredness about the facts that sometimes leads us to be more sure than we need to be. So we're talking about that in terms of vitamin D, and not that I'm backing down on my recommendation that people take vitamin D, but, you know, we're always open to new studies, new conclusions, which can change us. So the reason that I'm using this quote is because I'm reading about ancient Rome. And ancient Rome is just fascinating because here's this, a culture, and a lot of us don't realize it, but it lasted for 1,000 years, 500 BC to approximately 500 AD, and I'm reading about a specific time in Rome, which is a really crazy time. It was after the assassination of Julius Caesar. They had a series of emperors, starting with Augustus, and then they had his successors. They had Caligula and Tiberius and Nero. And this was a wild and crazy bunch of guys. You know, Nero was the one who supposedly fiddled while Rome burned. And he was extremely cruel and crazy and slaughtered his family and his enemies. Anyway, so it's just fascinating. I find it kind of interesting reading. But at the time, his tutor was a philosopher named Seneca. And, you know, there's Seneca Falls in New York, and there's a Seneca, I think, in Kansas. So he's like a famous philosopher. Mm-hmm. He lived around the first few decades of the present era, you know, AD, like, I think he died in AD 65. So here's what he says. He says, "Shall I not follow in the footsteps of my predecessors? I shall indeed use the old road, but if I find one that makes a shorter cut and is smoother to travel, I shall open the new road. Men who have made these discoveries before us are not our masters, but our guides. Truth lies open for all. It has not yet been monopolized, and there's plenty of it left even for posterity to discover." So that's pretty cool that this guy, he said this. I think he probably said this in the year 50. And so it is, like, almost 2,000 years later, that more and more discoveries are made. And we can't, you know, yes, we should, you know, pay homage to the knowledge and the luminaries of the past. But let's, you know, men who've made these discoveries before us are not our masters, but our guides. All right.
Our guides.
I rest my case.
Yeah. Wonderful.
So there's a little, little digression, but.
Yeah. Oh, no, anyway. That was worth the wait.
But yeah, I, you know, if you want to read about blood and gore and, like, really crazy stuff, read about the ancient Romans, because they were a wild and crazy bunch of folks.
Wild and crazy guys. Okay. Yeah. We've got a question from Karen. Karen emails us, "Dear Dr. Hoffman and Layla, as Layla has suggested on a podcast," thanks for listening, Karen, "I would like to roast nuts before eating them to make them easier to digest. Because I'm aware that one should not heat omega-3 oils, I wonder if it's safe to toast nuts high in omega-3s like walnuts, pecans, macadamia nuts. Thanks for the great podcast and your radio show. I've been a huge fan since the 1990s. Karen.
Well, let me just answer briefly, and then I'll let you launch in this. I recently, you know, I'm using nuts now as part of the Whole30 diet. So, Yeah, I was in Whole Foods, and I saw a nice, attractive bunch of almonds. And then when I got home, I realized they were raw. And so I don't particularly like raw almonds. I like the toasty almonds. So I put them on a cookie sheet, and I put them in the oven at 400, and I left them there for about 15 or 20 minutes. And that was a mistake. Because
they came, gonna say that's a long time.
It's a long time, and it's too high a temperature, and they came out all sort of brown, and they taste really like really kind of smoky and charred. But I kind of like that flavor. It's almost like you know, I'm hoping I don't do myself irreparable harm by eating these charred beans. But I kind of find the flavor interesting. But do not do that if you're going to make your own nuts. You probably want to put the oven up to maybe 250. And leave them there for 10 minutes. Or just turn it up to 250, put them on a cookie sheet, and then turn off the oven or something. Because it'll lightly toast them, but it won't damage them as much.
Yeah. The reason I suggested to roast nuts for many people, for instance, people with GERD, esophageal reflux, they have trouble with raw nuts, or raw nuts can exacerbate their symptoms because raw nuts contain trypsin inhibitors. Mm-hmm. And what that means is they inhibit your own digestive juices.
Right.
But by toasting them lightly, whether in the oven or even on a dry skillet over medium heat, 5 or 10 minutes is enough to actually deactivate those trypsin inhibitors and make them easier to digest. I'll tell you, I've had a couple of clients say to me, when I eat raw nuts, I become constipated. End of story. I mean, that's how powerful that can be. Now, with regard to the omega-3 oils, they're not, first of all, they're not whopper. You know, they don't have a whole lot of omega-3 oils. However, because you're toasting them lightly, and once they come down to room temperature, what you want to do, Karen, is store them in a glass container in either the refrigerator or the freezer if you have a lot of them, because nut fats may go rancid once they've been cooked that way. The toasting of them really helps to develop their flavors. Dr. Hoffman, that's probably what you like.
Right.
About toasting nuts.
Yeah, I really like that.
And things like that, yeah.
But I overdid it, so, you know, so be cautious, and they go pretty fast. they go faster than you think. So we answered the question about the damage to the oils and the damage to the nutrients. Yeah, what about that?
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. Because fish, such as salmon, wild Alaskan salmon, has quite a bit of omega-3 oils, my question is, should we not cook that? I don't know. You know, we know that the smoking of fish, smoking salmon, really reduces their omega-3s. But I think the main thing
also,
here is
like
probably
lox.
Not to overcook.
Lox is not
right. Yes, lox, exactly. Yeah.
And so I guess there's a trade-off. I think that would be fair to say is that on the one hand, the raw nuts have all the oils in abundance in a pure form, in an undamaged form. But also because of the trypsin inhibitors, you may get less complete absorption.
Well.
Because they're seeds, in effect. And seeds actually, you know, here's the old story, and I think people have heard it, but I will reiterate it, is that, when animals want to migrate, they just pick up and walk. But when plants want to migrate, they have to devise other means to migrate. So some have devised means like, you know, you'll have like dandelions, you know, where they have like little feathers on them and the wind blows them around. And that's one way. And another way is to get animals to eat them. And then the animals walk to the other side of the mountain and they poop them out undigested. So many seeds have the property that they are attractive to animals because they taste good, but they're not really that digestible. So on the one hand, they're attractive, so the animals eat them, but then they're not easily digested, and therefore they're pooped out in a form that's not doesn't prevent them from germinating when they hit the soil.
So anyway, you know, this could make the case for having salmon sashimi.
I do.
Instead of cooking salmon.
I do.
You too.
Yeah.
I do too.
Yeah.
I love that with a little lemon juice or a little wasabi. That's really all it needs.
But, you know, I got to say, I think it's doing it yourself. You got to be a little careful unless you really know fish, because salmon can contain parasites and, you know, spoiled salmon is dangerous. And the Japanese really pride themselves on their selection of fish. And if you go to a good sushi place, you're very unlikely to get food poisoning or parasites because they know that it's game over. If that were to happen, you know, they would have to, you know, commit harikiri or something. You know, it's like it's great.
Or at least we're not going back there to eat.
Right. It's a real, I mean, it's a very proud culture, and there would be a shame, you know, a great shaming if they were to feed their clientele bad fish. So I don't know, maybe some of these traditions have broken down with American culture. But, if I go to my sushi man, is a little bit like, your sushi man is a little like your doctor, or your stockbroker, or your lawyer. You know, somebody you really want to trust.
That's why you have to leave a big tip.
You have to leave a big tip because thank you for not giving me parasites.
Yeah. Karen, thank you for the very, very thoughtful question.
Yep.
Okay, we've got a question from Peter. I think Peter is a chiropractor. Dear Dr. Hoffman, I was listening to your show on vitamin E, which was very useful. When you were talking about reperfusion injury, it occurred to me that at least from my viewpoint at 10,000 feet, reperfusion injury looks a lot like sepsis. I really enjoyed your show with Dr. Fowler. In terms of some of the vascular, the cellular damage, since IV vitamin C helps with sepsis organ damage, I was wondering what it would do for reperfusion injury.
Okay, so let's talk about that. First of all, what in the heck is he talking about? Because we're talking a little bit in the weeds here, one professional to the other. And so what is reperfusion injury? Well, when you get a heart attack, some of the damage occurs when a blood clot forms in the artery and the tissue is deprived of oxygen, okay? So, it's like strangling someone. You know, you deprive them of oxygen, they die. So tissue, when it's deprived of oxygen, will die or be damaged. So that's one mechanism of damage when you have a heart attack or a stroke. However, when you open that up, and frequently there is a surgery that does that, or alternatively, sometimes they put people on a heart-lung machine that breathes for them and pumps their blood, but then you start the heart going again and blood rushes back into the heart, there's what's called reperfusion. And a lot of blood comes back to the tissue that's been damaged, and a lot of oxygen comes back to the tissue. And that's a second hit. That's like an aftershock to the tissue, because the tissue that's damaged is very susceptible now to the effects of even normal levels of oxygen. It creates a lot of free radical damage. So that's what is reperfusion injury. And it's only been sort of characterized, the past couple of decades because, everybody thought that the reason people had damage is because they were oxygen deprived. Well, actually, there's a second wave of damage when the oxygen floods back in. When they, sometimes they'll put a stent in or the clot resolves with a clot buster drug, and then blood rushes back. And that's the second part of damage. So how do you prevent the damage? Well, you can use antioxidants, and vitamin E is a particularly effective antioxidant for reperfusion injury, especially because it's a fat-soluble nutrient. And fat-soluble nutrients are actually able to protect the cells at a deep level somewhat better than vitamin
C.
Than the water-soluble.
Which is water-soluble, vitamin
now,
C. Yeah.
Per this guy's analogy, he says, well, people with sepsis sometimes do well with more levels of vitamin C. Yeah, sure. I mean, that's kind of a hypothesis that is worth trying. Are they going to be doing it in angioplasty suites across the country, hang a bag of vitamin C on a patient, and then when the blood starts flowing again, will they do an experiment to see if the vitamin C protects the tissue? I don't know. There's even some evidence that omega-3 fatty acids may help with reperfusion injury.
Yeah, he also wonders about quercetin.
Okay, quercetin might be plausible,
which is one of them.
Anti-inflammatory, antioxidant, okay. But,
Peter, thank you for your question.
All we need is, $20 million and, a grant from the NIH, and we're off to the races.
Right.
Want to start raising money? We'll do GoFundMe on that.
Okay. We've got a question from Joe. Mm-hmm. I love your show, Dr. Hoffman. Please continue to expose all the bad information out there.
All right. Right on.
All right. All right, Joe.
So we're carrying pitchforks here, you know.
My question, is it possible large quantities of water can affect the caloric intake of a meal simply by diluting it?
Mm.
Or does it get metabolized slower, thus affecting how it interacts with your system? Such as slowing down absorption. Does the same thing happen with supplements? First of all, may I say, if large quantities of water can decrease the caloric intake of a meal, everybody would be doing it.
Yeah, right. Right, thank you. And you know, there's some satiety value, I guess, to drinking a lot of water.
Sure.
But
I mean, the age-old advice of drink a big glass of water before every meal.
Mm-hmm.
So that can help to fill you up. I mean, that advice has been out there for decades.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I,
but
you know,
does
I have
it
to say,
dilute it?
Yeah. Here's another aspect of that. Let's say, you know, there's this thing called the dumping syndrome, which means that, mm-hmm. say, if you take a certain amount of calories as a meal and you chew it and it's with fiber, there'll be slow transit. It'll stay in your stomach. But if you take the same nutrients and you blenderize them in a blender and drink them down, that may be absorbed actually quicker, and it may create a greater surge mm-hmm. in your blood sugar, which results in a corresponding response of insulin, and that may perversely make you fatter. You know, so if you sluice all those nutrients down with a lot of water, they might actually reach your intestine faster. The intestine is actually where much of the absorption occurs, and that might result paradoxically in a greater susceptibility to overweight, you know?
Hmm. Yeah.
Just saying.
Yeah.
You know?
So Joe is also asking, same thing about supplements. Does, you know, do large amounts of liquid dilute the supplements? No.
No.
I wouldn't think so.
No.
I think if anything, it would possibly help in the breaking down of the supplements, along with their own digestive juices and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Yeah.
We often, you know, sometimes we advise people who have things like acid reflux or who don't have much of an appetite not to drink water during their meals because it fills them up.
And it also may...
But for the rest of us, it's perfectly fine.
It may, for some people, it may dilute their hydrochloric acid and pancreatic enzymes. It may compromise their ability to break the food down somewhat, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. I mean, it used to be one of the macrobiotic rules was to not drink while you're eating, you know, but that doesn't make sense either, you know. I mean, the thought is don't dilute your digestive force, you know, drink a little after you eat, but don't, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that's also, mm-hmm. that's over the top, too, I think.
It is over the top, yeah. And I also don't know what Joe means by large quantities of water, but, you know, for most people, eight ounce cups of water a day.
There's a word for it.
For most people.
The word for it is dipsomania.
What?
You know, which
what is
dipsomania, which is like a compulsion to drink a lot of water. And, you know, I wonder if some of the gals who are walking around with these big, you know, bottles of water here in Manhattan, these ultra-thin gals, and they're like swigging the bottles like, you know, like cowboys in a saloon, you know, walking around the streets of Manhattan. And I guess in their belief, it may satisfy their appetite because they're probably, you know, a little quasi-anorexic. And you
maybe,
know, I see a lot of like very thin girls that look like they could use a meal, and they got a big mm-hmm. bottle. They know, not a little bottle, not a little petite bottle, but they have a big, big, you know, like a quart bottle of water, and they're like slugging down that Evian in the street, like drunken sailors, you know. And what's going on with that?
Water intoxication.
And literally, you can become weak from that because if you take in too much water. You know, they say that, you know, when they talk about poison, they say, well, anything can be a poison. Even water can be a poison. And it certainly can.
Sure.
Because if you overconsume water, you will become hyponatremic. You will dilute the sodium in your blood. Hyponatremia is dangerous. It can make you feel weak, but it can even kill you. It can cause dangerous brain swelling. And some marathon runners have died, you know, high, you know, ultra endurance athletes have died because instead of being given liquids with electrolytes, like Gatorade was not my favorite thing, but it's, you know, at least got balanced electrolytes. They've been just given water. They drink water, water, water. They're very thirsty. They want to cool themselves down with water because they're, you know, hyperthermic, overheated. And then they feel wobbly legged. They end up in the emergency tent, and they have to be given intravenous saline. And there have been cases where they have fatal brain swelling as a result of that. So,
wow.
You know, so, okay, I mean, I'm taking it to the extreme here, but you mm-hmm. can go overboard with water. Okay?
Okay.
All right,
well,
so that is, yeah. I think that's about all the time that we have for today's edition of Intelligent Medicine.
Okay.
So this weekly podcast brought to you by the Hoffman Center, and we urge you to check out our supplements. Many of the supplements that we mentioned on this program are available at drhoffman.com at reasonable prices. We have a price match guarantee, and we urge you to fulfill your supplement needs there and thereby assure not only your own health, but also the continuity of this free resource, which we're very happy to provide to you. And also, you can get information about becoming a patient at the Hoffman Center at drhoffman.com. So check it out. Please subscribe to our newsletter, follow us on Facebook and Twitter, and join us for additional podcasts, because we got lots of them, daily podcasts we post at drhoffman.com, and you can download them on iTunes, as many of you already probably do. Thanks for joining us today, Layla.
Thank you, Dr. Hoffman. Thanks for listening, everybody.
I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.